My presentation topic is percutaneous score interval matching using both sharp and non-parametric confidence intervals. It's not a kind of fantastic thing, it's not a big deal, but just a kind of idea, okay, a present idea. I need more work on this, but today I'm going to present some basic concept of this idea and one empirical example to show whether it's kind of, at least to be kind of viable match method to commonly use the match method. But this we have to put it there. Okay, no, nothing to disclose. Okay, so I'm going to introduce for IC may have some variations in terms of background knowledge in percutaneous score analysis. So I'm going to just quickly introduce what's the percutaneous score analysis, what's the percutaneous score matching. For those of you already know, you be patient with me. Then I'm going to talk about my idea about interval matching using bootstrap. So the basis of this interval matching is the bootstrap non-parametric intervals. I'm going to present an example to show the effectiveness of this kind of idea to some commonly used percutaneous score matching methods, and then give some conclusions or remarks. Okay, so we already know we have different variable outcomes, then we have treatment or intervention, whatever the way we call it. So we try to find the effect of this treatment on outcome or dependent variable. This is a typical experimental research. If we can randomly assign patients or subjects, students, so it depends on the area of research. So there's a different language. I came from mathematical background and then went to education area. Now I'm in the health science. So it's kind of different terms for the subjects, cases, participants, but experimental research, some we call it in the health area called randomized control trials and randomized clinical trials. But we all know that methodologically it's the same, okay, just different terms. So this is typical, this is what we want, but in practice, sometimes it's not feasible. Impractical, so sometimes we say, well, we may get some quasi-experimental research control for some core varies, and so that's kind of a quasi-experimental research or clinical trial, randomized clinical trials with controls. So if we cannot do some randomization, no control group, just look at what's the variables, effect, and outcome, that's the typically required observational studies. But the problem is that all these design studies not a close look at the relationship between the core variables and the assignment conditions. So that's the where the selection bias may come from. Okay. So the percutaneous score analysis try to address this problem, try to reduce the selection bias, try to find what the relationship between core variables and the treatment conditions. So this is like a general idea. Okay. To summarize this kind of information, so random assignment only theoretically possible. So in practice, okay, selection bias always exists. So percutaneous score analysis actually first coined by Rosenberg Rubin in 1983. So try to help us to balance the distribution between between two treatment conditions in terms of the distribution of covariates. So first we needed to estimate. They said, okay, the percutaneous score can be estimated by the probability of the treatment assigned to the treatment condition given the covariates. So if the two treatment conditions, not just regression, if more than two, we could use discriminant analysis. So in general, the standard error of this percutaneous score estimates is kind of unknown. Usually, you could use logistic regression, use the parametric way to use a formula, assume it's normal distribution or certain types of parametric distribution, get the some errors, but it's not always accurate. Okay. So, Professor Gomarci actually, based on the assumption stated by Rosenberg Rubin, that's an ignorability in treatment assignment. Okay. That means, so if we assume the dependent variable is independent of the treatment condition given covariates, then this dependence also is true given the propensity scores. So kind of a reduce the multidimensional multiple covariates into one dimension, one variable. That's the propensity score. So this is why we can work on the propensity score instead of working on the multiple covariates. So we can balance the covariance distribution based on just one variable. That's the propensity score. In other words, if the two cases in one is treatment, one is control, if their propensity scores are the same, then in probability, the corresponding covariance will have the same value. So that's the kind of theory we base on to do the matching. But this is a very simple naive example. We're very simple. So if we have probability score calculated based on the using Noether's regression, we have this kind of scores. Then treatment condition, comparison condition, we have just hypothetically a few cases or subjects. Then try to find the closest one. One in treatment, the final one in the control, which one is the closest? Then of course 0.61 is closest to 0.62. The next one, the 0.64, then close to that exactly will get the same. Sometimes we can lucky enough, sometimes not. So it's kind of try to match every case in the treatment group using cases in the comparison group in order to find their propensity scores as close as possible. Okay. Some cases may not be able to match with any cases in the treatment group, but that's fine. But once we have the cases in the control group larger, they have more room to find the closer relationship or closer distance to the probability score in treatment group. Okay. Okay. So there are some commonly used matching methods. It's very simple. And the first one is called nearest neighbor. Okay. So that's very simple, just the absolute, not absolute, just the distance, just the raw distance, absolute. We can say the absolute because the negative positive still. We treat it whether it's close or not. So the absolute distance, which one, which two cases, their probability scores are closest possible. So, but sometimes if the control group, we don't have many in the control, then we cannot find it very close. Even we find it close, but it is, in theory, it's not close enough. So sometimes we can find the probabilistic matching, get a not good quality matching cases. So Cohen and Rubin created a way that we can, how about get a band, kind of a band. If any distance larger than certain value, we don't say it's not matching. Okay. So instead of just look at absolute distance, also we want the distance smaller than a certain band. They also showed that a quarter of the standard deviation of the probability score will do a good job. Okay. But this caliber margin say, well, if any within this range, okay, not just take one, we could take every case in the control group, if the satisfy this condition, we take them all. This is a one-to-many matching, called radius matching. Okay. There's some other matching methods called Mach-Analobus metrical matching. It's actually, this came from original exact matching with multiple covariates. So use Mach-Analobus distance, but that Mach-Analobus distance calculated not just based on the covariates, also add one more variable, that's the probability score. Okay. There are some variants of this method called Mach-Analobus caliber matching, of course. Okay, they borrowed the idea from caliber matching. So Mach-Analobus distance is more than a certain value. We take all cases within this range. So this here, also there's some called genetic matching. I see this is a special case of medical Mach-Analobus match because this is, you see here, is the variance coefficient matrix, give the weighting, put in the formula to calculate the Mach-Loeb distance. So depends on different way, get a different way to do the genetic matching. Okay. Also, that's another way to do the matching. It's not exactly case-to-case matching, actually it's matching with the stratum. Okay, stratum by stratum matching called subclassification or stratification. Okay, so matching with the stratum, usually phi, everybody knows phi stratum will be good enough. Also, that's basically in the economics area, they use called kernel matching or log-linear matching. Actually, it's a combined matching and analysis into one procedure. It's not just matching. Okay, usually kind of matching is like in the data management stage. Okay, so they combine the data management and analysis into one procedure. So that's the kernel matching. Actually, it's a one to all, not just one case matching with one or more. Just a one to every case in the control use the kind of linear function. Okay, linear function, kernel linear function. Also, there's a variant called differences matching. I'm not going to talk more about, but it's to kind of give us a rough idea. But all this matching, we have one problem. Okay, now one problem is all this matching based on the point estimation. Okay, for example, here. So here you have one case preliminary score in the treatment, now control. We just see exactly the magnitude, the value of these probability scores. But we don't know because the probability score is estimated. Yes, the unknown factors, we don't know. We don't know what was the variation of this estimation. So we never know. Maybe the one below this will be much better. Okay. Or even the one higher than this one above will be much this better. So we never know. We don't know the variation or the standard error or estimate error of these probability scores, then we don't know how evaluate the quality of this matching or closeness of this true probability scores. So it's difficult to establish a good way to evaluate matching quality. Okay. The purpose of this study is trying to say how to capture this variation of these estimated probability scores. Of course, bootstrap. Okay, bootstrap. So this kind of idea is naive, simple. Okay, so I just use one example to show whether it's effective. Okay, so the interval, I call it interval matching. You might see the interval matching for some other definition, but here I still call interval matching. So instead of one by one look at the magnitude of these probability scores, I will see whether the confidence interval, if two confidence intervals, they overlap. Not just to see the absolute distance. If they overlap, I will see these two cases are matched. Okay, so that's the basic idea. Okay. Okay. So this is a hypothetical example to show how to do this interval matching is bootstrap. So we hypothetically have these cases, and then we have estimated probability score based on each bootstrap sample. Okay, do one bootstrap, calculate the probability score, another bootstrap, kind of another bootstrap, and we usually number of bootstrap usually 200 or 500 or 1,000. Then we based on the horizontally look at this quantiles, okay, percentiles. For example, look at 95% or 68% percentile. You look at the 16th percentile versus the 84th percentile. So you get a confidence interval for each case. Okay, for each case. Okay. So just a simple illustration. Okay, so that's the bootstrap. Okay. How many minutes?
About four.
4 minutes? Okay. So this is an empirical example. Okay, I use the National Cross Society Evaluation of High Risk Youth Programs. So I selected 500 cases from more than 1,000 youth. They initiated substance use prior to entry. So treatment group, control group, this kind of size of group, and then of course dependent variable, and it's a 30-day use. And some semantic score for this all use tobacco, alcohol, marijuana, and illicit drugs. And then that study has 22 coverage. Okay, why 22? Why this many? Is it too many, too small? Dr. Meyer will tell us. Okay, whether it's too many, too few. Okay. Okay. Anyway, so before marching, you see the protein score is kind of skewed. Okay. To the low end to the control group, and the high end for the treatment group is by default. Okay. It should be that way, but we want the two distributions symmetric. Okay, symmetric. So after the marching, I use the nearest labor. This is the basic. Okay. Marching. So after the marching, well, not that, I mean, improve a little bit, not that great, but caliber marching better. I use the interval marching. Whether it's even better, we don't know. We look at this. Also look at the statistics, not just graphical. Look at the quality margin. So in terms of statistics to evaluate the margin quality, use a t-test or standard bias or percent bias reduction. Okay, so this is the data. Okay, so look at the margin, before margin, nearest labor margin, caliber margin, the interval margin. You see some more reduced bias and some less reduced, but overall look at this propensity score. That's the thing we want to look at. So the 81% reduction, and also the standard here, standard bias also smaller than others. So reduction more than standard bias become less compared to compared to the nearest margin and also caliber margin. So here 27 versus 40, and versus 76. And it's 81 versus 71 versus 42. So at least for this empirical example, the interval margin does better. But we don't know, okay, for other situations. Okay, so conclusion, okay? This margin looks better for this example. Why? Well, theoretically, this kind of way to capture not just within case variation, also between. Usually, you calculate the probability score for all cases, and that's we can calculate the variation between, that's the standard deviation. The caliber margin uses a quarter of a standard deviation, that's the vertical. Look at this one probability score, that's the between cases. But this interval margin also look at the within case, the estimated probability score, so we capture the both. Okay, this is kind of an explanation why it's better, but still. Okay, there's some negative percentage reduction because original bias is small because the performance is unstable. And of course, simulation would be better to see the other situation whether this method is better than the method I compared. Okay, so thank you.